Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Happy Friday. Today is January 30th, 2015. I'm Michelle Pache, filling in here for Jeannie, and I'm with Dr. Tim Hayes. We warmly welcome you to the show, and thank you for choosing to be here. The call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk with Dr. Tim. We encourage you to call in with your comments or questions, which allow you to actively strengthen and deepen your practice. So, Tim, welcome, and let's start the show.
All right. Welcome to you, Michelle. How's the volume on my call?
You sound good. There's no road noise. And keep driving the traffic. Be safe.
Well, I'm just sitting in a parking lot, so I have a good signal, and I'll drive after the show's over. So how are you today? How's the mood striking you? And
as I was logging in,
on your mind?
No. I was logging in, and I'm just thinking that it's been quite a ride this week with the day-to-day progression of the shows and participating at this level, and so glad that it's Friday.
Well, you're probably not alone in that. Let me just start by echoing what you said and thanking everybody who's choosing to tune in, and we appreciate the commitment. We appreciate your time. We think we're offering some of the best tools we know to help improve the quality of your life. If you're not familiar with those tools, you can find them at www.whyagain.org. And if you click on the red and white bullseye or the link that says start here, it'll take you to a page that's loaded with worksheets and tools that if you use them, might just improve the quality of your life, your mental life, your emotional life, your physical life, your relationships. And if you have any questions about how to use those tools, which are available for free, that's what this radio show is for, to help teach and then support people in using these tools, practical tools, to improve the quality of your life. And we're glad you're here with us, and we hope that you find it of benefit, and we hope that if you try the tools and either they don't work for you or they do work for you, you'll call and you'll dial in 646-200-4169 and press 1, and Michelle or whoever else is running the switchboard on that day will know you've got a question. And if you call and have a question, I'll guarantee you that other people who are listening have similar questions. And one of the best things you can do for yourself and everybody else is raise the question. For decades now in my therapy, I've tried to tell people that one good question is worth 1,000 solid answers. Because if I'm questioning, I'm observing. And if I'm observing and open, there's a potential for me to learn something new, to grow beyond where I was yesterday. And I think that's the purpose of being here. I think that's one of the primary purposes for being here, that and the extension of love in form. So the primary tool that Dr. Rice has made available and Jeannie has helped support with this fabulous website is the tool of forgiveness. It's the tool of the ancient Aramaic process of forgiveness. And in that process, it's on an observation that everything I'm feeling inside me, I'm creating inside of me. And that, as somebody said earlier today, a meeting I was in, a business meeting, believe it or not, and the person said, "You are an infinite being. You are a divine, infinite being. And you are a creator in that state." So what do you create with? Well, you can create with your hands, and you can create with your tools like a hammer or a chisel. But the primary mechanism for creation for us as humans, as these infinite beings, is mind energy. And in the Bible, John 1, it says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was made flesh." If you go to the, I believe it's the King James Version of the Bible, that's how that opens up. And the ancient Aramaic had such a deeper, richer understanding of energy systems and mind and body and soul and the universe. And they said something that might sound very similar, but is really powerfully different. And the ancient Aramaic translation that so much more of an explanation for how things work is, "In the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh." You have, as a human being, as far as we know, you are the only group of beings that has, on this planet, that has the ability to originate creative mind energy. And with that, it's a creative force, and the most powerful thing your mind energy creates is your experience of life. So, one of the previous worksheets Dr. Rice had, the current worksheet is a 7-step worksheet. One of the previous worksheets was 12 steps. And one of my favorite lines from that worksheet is, "The truth is, my reality is strictly internal, it's unique to me, and is created out of my own thoughts. I initiate mind energy. I choose the focus of my conscious awareness in each moment. And I have the infinite capacity to choose the focus of my conscious awareness in each moment. It's something no one can take from me. No situation can deprive me of that ability." The next important thing to know is that what I choose to focus my conscious awareness on in each moment literally creates my experience of life. And this is from the most simple, mundane situations to the most horrific, you know, years-long struggles like Nelson Mandela being in prison for 20-some years. He chose to focus on loving thoughts, and his experience was one that allowed him to leave prison and work cooperatively with the people who imprisoned him to create a more loving, a more just, a more productive government for the entire country that he was in. He created an experience inside of himself that was not dependent upon the outside conditions to change in order for him to feel loving, for him to feel peaceful, for him to feel whole. This is a possibility for everyone listening. We, each one of us, we may not have been taught this before, we may be out of practice with it, but it has never been dented or rusted or faded in any way. Your true nature as a human being, your true nature as the extension of love in form, your true role on this planet as someone who is here to bless creation is something that is always available to you in every moment. And once you become aware of it, and once you begin to practice it, it gains momentum and it becomes an unstoppable creative force. And what you may create with it is pain and sadness and fear, or you might create with it love and joy and compassion. and the extension of your true nature in every interaction. If you're interested in that, we have tools that can help you accomplish it. If you haven't heard of this before, we have conversations, we have tools, we have support groups that can help you become aware of it, learn how to do it, and practice until you're a master at it. And again, when I say master, I mean someone who has decided to become a perpetually avid student. In Way of Mastery, it says, a master is someone who has mastered the art of always being a student. And for years before I read Way of Mastery, I found myself telling people, I was coaching people to become teachers of parenting skills, and I was setting up the program, and I said, I want you to know, if you're teaching a class of people and parents to try to teach them these parenting skills, you can learn every bit as much in each class you teach as anybody in your class learns from you. You must put yourself in a receptive mode. You must understand that this is a discussion. You must understand that what you currently believe you know is either only partially true or completely false. And if you're willing to put yourself in a situation where you are subordinate to the situation and the fundamental laws of the universe around you and ask to be taught, you can become a perpetually avid student. And that is my definition of a master. So here's this process that's based on the knowledge that you're a creator. And I mentioned this line from the 12-step worksheet. The truth is, my reality is strictly internal. It's unique to me, created out of my own thought. And a little bit later on in the worksheet, it says, with blame, I hide my power. And when I'm leading a support group and using that worksheet, I ask people to stop and identify what is the power I'm hiding when I blame someone or something else for anything in my life. And most people look at me with a blank stare on their face, and I refer back to the earlier part of the worksheet where it says, the truth is, my reality is strictly internal, it's unique to me, and is created out of my own thoughts. So if I'm blaming anyone or anything else for what's going on in my life or how I feel about it, I'm hiding from myself my own power to create my own reality. So the tool of forgiveness is based on this fundamental observation of us as creators. And then it identifies the process of negative emotion, sadness, fear, contraction, comfort, guilt, anger, frustration, as an alarm system that the Creator put in me to wake me up to the fact that if I'm feeling any of those sensations or energies or thought processes, I'm focusing on the wrong things. I'm using my mind energy to create discomfort rather than what I was put here to create, which is love, which is joy, which is happiness, extension, contentment, extending that loving energy in every interaction. And forgiveness is a tool I can use to go inside myself, inside my thoughts, my energies that I'm holding within my physical and energetic system, and remove whatever doesn't belong there, and return myself to the effortless awareness of my true nature as this energy of love. And there is no more joyful state, there is no more powerful state than being aligned with the energy of creation, which is trying to express through me. And if I can get there, even for just a few moments, I'm going to want more of it. And if I understand how I got there, and if I have been given specific tools to return to that state every time I get off the target, there's no reason I can't learn to stay there longer, more frequently, more gently, more lovingly, and day after day, build a momentum to live in a more loving space, to live in a more contented space, to live in a more joyful space, to live in a more positively creating mode. And that's what we're here to support. And we'd be happy to entertain your questions. 646 200 4169. That's our intro. What's going on, Michelle? Anybody in the chat room or on the phone with a hand up?
Oh, yeah. Let's just jump into it. We've got Patsy and Mitzi waiting, and we're going to start with Julie from Oregon. Hello, Julie.
Hello. I just wanted to say thank you to both of you for holding down the fort and doing the show this week for Michael and Jeannie so that they can have a break and focus the way they need to right now. And it takes a lot from you, and you're awesome, and I appreciate you and our family. And I just really, really do, and I'm sure a lot of people feel that way. Thank you.
Well, thank you. How can we support you today?
Well, you pretty much always do. I don't really have a question. I can let that go for some other people. I will say that I'm going through a lot of stuff right now that just seems out of the ordinary, and I'm so grateful for the viewpoint of knowing that that more opportunities to heal is what really is going on. So it's weird. I mean, I can't go through the list, but there's just a lot all at once. And at times I will feel suicidal, like, oh, my gosh, I'm getting older. I don't have the energy to deal with this. I can hardly keep focus and blah, blah, blah. That's script that still is in my mind at times. And I get to see what that thinking creates for me, which is I've gotten sick, I've broken a few things accidentally around the house, and my dog got bit by a dog. And so there's when little things, big things out of the ordinary start showing up in my life, I know that I'm listening to the wrong voice, and it seems necessary to me that I listen to that wrong voice because it's the world, and it looks like the world's getting worse, and it's just there's all these spirals that I can go into and get hooked into, and I have to let it go. There is no other way to get out of it. It's just I have to let it go and get back on track with who I am and ask for help.
Well, Julie, let me interrupt you.
Mm-hmm.
Because as you keep saying you have to let it go,
yeah,
what you're telling me is you don't have to let it go. You're holding on tight, and there's something in you that's blocking you from letting it go. Letting it go is the easiest thing. It's akin to breathing. We as human beings don't need lessons in how to let things go. What we really need is to be coached and trained to the warning signals within us, the negative emotions, the tightness, the tension and fear, etc., that go off after we've let it go, and then we reach over and pick it up again.
Oh.
And then we return our thoughts to it. I love, there's a lesson in Way of Mastery in the eighth lesson in it. It talks about thinking about a still, clear pool of water and having a stone in my hand that I raise up above that still, clear pool of water. And when I drop that stone in that pool, it sends out ripples. And that's exactly analogous to what happens when I choose a thought in my mind. My mind is calm. I'm in the energy of creation. I'm sleeping. I have a nice, comfortable sleep. And I wake in the morning, and it's peaceful. And I become aware of my breath. And then I choose a thought like, oh, my gosh, I'm late. I overslept. Oh, my gosh, my dog got bit, and he's probably in pain. Oh, my gosh, I'm gonna throw up again today, and I'm still. And I keep choosing those negative thoughts, throwing them into the pool and sending out those ripples. As those energy waves leave my mind when I think a thought, it's going to interact with the world. It is a creative force, and it's going to bring back something that's in vibration with the thought I just put in. Now, because I have the infinite capacity to choose the focus of my conscious awareness, and that creates my experience of life in the moment, when those negative energies come bouncing back off the shores of life and hit me again, I can choose to interpret them as this horrible thing. I can choose to wallow in the pain and think, why me, and I must be doing it wrong, and or I can choose to experience it as just another ripple of energy. And if I make my home in the breathing unity, if I stay centered in my true nature as love, it washes over me, and it's so temporary and fleeting that in the same moment I'm aware of the discomfort or the negative energy hitting me or these outside consequences that I'm not appreciative of, I can see the gift. I can see the lesson. I can see past it and how I might use this experience I'm going through to help myself and others along the path. It's a choice. And it's not a problem letting go of something. You've let go of it 1,000 times since you were on the call today or since you raised your hand to talk. And you picked it up 1,001. And when you say, I have to let go, I have to do this, well, you're proving that you don't have to because you're sitting there wallowing in it. Now, when you say, if you were to say it this way and say, if I really want to be rid of this, I have to put it down and be willing not to pick it up again. The only way out is through. That's true. But to keep repeating, I have to do this, I have to do this, I have to do this, you might as well just say, I'm choosing to be miserable for now. So, you know, that's my day today, and thanks for the call, and we'll talk to you when I'm not choosing to feel so miserable. If you really want to do something, you'll stop talking about it, and you'll pick up some of the tools that Michael's made available. You might do a mind shifter on what it would be like if I put down this misery and this victimhood and never picked it up again. It's safe and healing for me to experience myself as a creator of everything in my life. It's safe and healing for me to live into my competence and my joy and actually clear your docket and spend a couple hours writing, not talking about how you need to write, but exploring through the use of a mind shifter tool or the worksheet process, what's really got you picking up the same negative thoughts over and over and over again. That would be my offering.
Thank you. I'm just about ready to cry. Thank you so much.
Well, go ahead and cry and breathe and pick up a pen and do some work. And remember,
no.
Michael came and did a still point breathing years ago here up in Woodstock or Crystal Lake or whatever. And there was a woman there who was in her maybe her late 50s, and she started crying. And really sobbing, crying in a heavy, heavy way. And Michael went over to her and just, this changed her life because she's repeated it a number of times since then. And he just whispered in her ear, he said, you've already cried about this. You've already cried about this a lot. You can allow the tears to come, but keep your breath moving because you've already cried about this. And I would offer that to you, Julie. You've already picked this thing up 20,000 times, and you don't have to leave it the next time you put it down. Well, you could. You might choose that. And it's okay if you want to spend the next 15 years as a victim. That's okay. That's your choice. You're an infinite being. You were never born. You'll never die. You are the extension of love in form. You shine forth like a sunbeam to the sun from God as the energy of creation. You are an infinite divine being. And if you choose to spend this and the next few lifetimes living in the victim misery mode, that's okay. You're still loved, loving, and lovable forever. And at the same time, if you choose to just put this down and not pick it up again ever in this lifetime, that's okay too. But talking about it, Krishnamurti, so one of my favorite lines from Krishnamurti, the simplest statement, the word is not the thing. Saying, I need to do this, and $4.50 will get you a coffee at Starbucks. Talking about it is worse than even ignoring it. Because talking about it can help you create the illusion that you know something useful and that you're making a difference in your life. Stop talking. If you really want change, be different.
Okay. You're right on about all of that. And I needed to hear it. I needed your mind and your clarity. Thank you very much.
All right. Good luck with that. And keep us posted if you choose to do some of that work. Let us know how it works out for you.
Okay.
Yes, Michelle.
Well, when you were mentioning the mind shifter about confidence and living into the joy, embracing yourself as a creator and kind of those things, and I was thinking about something you had said the other day about the fear that you, when you achieve something, that maybe that you lose it, because Julie has had those periods, collected time of, you know, where she's like feeling all the joy and all the spirit and all the love, and things are really coming together. And so then maybe that's, there's something that's tied in with then losing it again.
That's part of it. Thank you.
Well, if you're saying that you've reached this peak emotional experience and it was exalting and it was invigorating and joyful, and now you're afraid if you go there again, you'll lose it and you'll fall down into depression again, then, okay, so maybe you don't want to go that high. You know, maybe you want to practice with the little things. Maybe you want to take a clue from the tightrope walker. The tightrope walker doesn't stretch the tightrope between two 50-story high-rise buildings and just practice out there with no net. The tightrope walker walked on a rope on the ground and then walked on a rope that's 4 inches above the ground and then builds the skill and builds the knowledge within themselves that they have balance and strengthens that. And then, and only then, do they go for the great heights.
Oh, that's a good one. I like that. Yeah, because I build a certain amount of little things.
Let's say, you know, you mentioned earlier that, you know, sometimes you feel suicidal. So let's not go for exultant joy and feeling one with the universe. If I'm moving from feeling suicidal and I want to move in a positive direction, it's too big a jump to go from feeling suicidal to feeling one with the universe and that I'm an infinite being of divine love. But I might go from feeling suicidal to having anger at the person that I think is causing my upset. And then I might feel a little empowered there. And I know I don't want to stay there too long because that's a whole illusion and falseness, but it feels a little bit better and a little bit more within my grasp than the suicidal stuff. And then if I spend a little time in that anger, I might move over into a little resentment, and then I might move from there to a little appreciation of the fact that I have the ability to choose how I express that resentment, so I don't have to go blast the person that did this thing that I think is so horrible to me. And then from there, I realize, you know, it's been about 20 minutes, and I haven't felt suicidal at all, and I'm not even really feeling the rage, so maybe I might spend a little time doing a mind shifter and see if I can move toward a little bit of a feeling calm instead of reaching for that infinite joy and connection with the universe. And so work within the steps from where you are, moving in the direction of where you want to be, and work with learning to ask, not trying to figure it out, but just get quiet and ask, what do I need to do now to feel just a little bit better? What do I need to do now to drop out of this depression or rage or hopelessness? What could be a slight shift in my focus of thought that will produce an incremental and understandable and achievable difference in my feeling state that I can hold on to and feel safe there, and then I can gradually move toward the direction of where I know I want to be? The key words there are asking, not trying to figure it out, making yourself subordinate to that higher intelligence that created a divine, unseen curriculum whose entire purpose, the entire purpose of the curriculum, is to educate me to the existence of the intelligence and the wisdom that created the curriculum. If I ask, I will receive. It's a contract. It's a law. It's a universal law. And I don't understand how it works, so I'm going to ask that law, how does this work? Show me. Give me a little something. I'm going to quit trying to figure it out. I'm going to get calm, breathe, and ask to be shown what I need to see the bigger picture, to shift the focus of my attention to something slightly more loving and positive. So give that a try, Julie, and give us a call back and let us know how it goes. And keep your breath moving and feel free to cry if you need to, and also know you've already cried about all this stuff.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call.
Yeah.
Okay, Michelle, do you have somebody else with their hand up? Or anything in the chat room?
Yes, Patsy from North Carolina is here. Hello, dear.
Hello. It's good to hear your voice. And I join with Julie in thanking you both for your work this week. And it's your clarity when you elaborate, Dr. Tim. Thank you. And I'd also like to say thank you to Julie for the book that she wrote, and that I have enjoyed it, and on children, and since I work with children, I have appreciate her gift to those of us who've read it. So thank you. But my question today was kind of based on your yesterday talking about Rachma, and I was hoping that you would then talk a little bit more about Kuba love. And that is our perception. And is the reason for our Kuba love that we work on that, is it so that we will not project onto an event, but that our perception of that event will come from a place of love? That was my question, and I will just listen off the air. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you, Pat. And let me just clarify that the Julie that was just on the phone is Julie from Ashland, Oregon, and Julie Habersick, who is the author of the book you're talking about, is the Julie who lives down right near Heartland. And
Well,
it was an inner-city school teacher that applied these tools and then wrote about it.
Okay. Well, I thank that, Julie, then. Okay. Thank you for clarifying that.
You're welcome. And as far as, Jen, I would like to clarify that as you say the words Kuba love, I think it's missing the mark. I might be wrong, and I'm not the Aramaic scholar like Dale is. But I've listened to Dale, and I've listened to Michael, and I've read quite a bit from the Enlightenment manuscript that comes from the work of the Kabbalist manuscript, trying to translate that ancient text of the first century New Testament that was, I think it's a sixth century copy of a first or second century Bible. And the work is to translate it directly from Aramaic into English. And as I understand that, the word rachma does not mean love, and the word kuba does not mean love. These are not different words for love from the ancient Aramaic. These are different concepts altogether that the Greeks had no way to understand. And so they collapsed them, these two words and several others, maybe up to 17 different words, were all collapsed into the one word, love, because it was the closest they could understand. And like I was talking about yesterday, if we had the world's greatest physicist talking to a first or second grade class or a kindergarten class and talking about wormholes and quantum physics and bilocation theory and string theory and quarks and entanglement theory and all of that stuff, and then after this hour or two long hour lecture by the world's greatest physicist, we went and asked the children, what was that person talking about? What did that scientist tell us? What was her main point? And we used the children's words. Well, she talked about big things, and she talked about really little things. And then she talked about things that seem to be there, but they're not there. And then we wrote that this is what the physicist was talking about. That's about how close the Greeks got to what was being talked about in the ancient Aramaic. So someone's got quite a bit of background noise going. If you could mute yourself. So when you say rachma love and kuba love, I think that's completely missing the point. I think the word rachma from the ancient Aramaic was talking about a concept that we're just beginning to understand. And one way to approach an understanding of it and begin experimenting with it so we can experience the truth of it is to talk about it as though it's a filter in my mind over intentions. And if I have the thought, I want to set rachma in my mind, I want to only send positive, loving energy out through my mind toward the world, then something literally changes energetically in my mind. And that change in my mind, that filter in my mind, is this rachma. And it will allow me, once it's set, once it's active in my mind, it will only allow intentions keyed to creativity, to love, to compassion, to joy, to the extension of love, to be used as the building blocks for my goals. And in my mind, near the back of my brain, there's another place where there's a filter that can be set. And again, just like on the frontal lobes, I could set that filter to hostility or to fear or to rachma. If I set it to hostility, then everything I look at is going to seem really irritating to me. If I set it to fear, everything I look at is going to seem threatening to me. If I set it to rachma, everything I look at is going to seem safe, loving, and creative to me. The same thing with this filter in the back of my mind. It can be set to, it's a filter over my perceptions, and it's a filter that can be set to fear, hostility, or kuba. And kuba only allows perceptions keyed to the creative energy, to the wholeness of experience, to compassion, to love, to register in my mind. And in the ancient literature, they talked about perfect love casts out fear. And in the ancient Aramaic, the definition for perfect love was having Rachma and Kubba both set in my mind. So now, any way you look at it, whatever I'm sending out in intentions or whatever I'm allowing to come in through perception is going to be something that's accurate, that's truth with a capital T, that's actuality, that's a direct observation of the energy of creation, that sees how we are all connected, that sees everyone I interact with as the mind of Christ, as a part of the mind of God, that we are seeing, being, swimming in the mind of God. It is the root and foundation of our being. It is the nth degree of our extension of love. It's both the ground that the tree is planted in, the roots of the tree, the trunk of the tree, the branches, the leaves, and the fruit. It's all connected. And when I have Rachma and Kubba set, don't believe this. Don't stay stuck in the words about it. Try this as a practice. Do this thing where you tell yourself, I take a breath, I center, I set Rachma, I set Kubba. I ask to be shown only loving intentions and only loving perceptions. And do it again, and do it again, and do it again. Do it when you're stuck in traffic and starting to get irritated. Do it when you get the news that your dog just got bitten by another dog. Do it when you get a call from the bill collector. And do it, and do it, and do it. And experience what happened. The experience that comes from choosing to see truth, light, love, creation, as it's intended to be, rather than as the culture has taught me. The intention to see lovingly and to move away from those thoughts that produce anger, fear, tightness, contraction, frustration, rage, confusion within me, the choice to move away from those thoughts and towards those thoughts of I want to see lovingly, I want to intend lovingly, I want to send out love, I want to receive love, I want to experience the truth of my reality and the reality of the presence of love in front of me. Then call us back and tell us what that experience was like, because then you know what Kubba is. You may not have any words for it, but then you'll know what Rachma is. You may not have any words for it. And then you'll know what perfect love is. It will be impossible for there to be any moment of fear in your experience, in your mind, if Rachma and Kubba are both set. And how do you describe that? You don't. How do you experience it? You just do it. You hold the willingness to, you focus your creative machinery on it, which is the power of your mind energy. You will it, and you breathe into it, and you ask a power higher than yourself how to experience this. And when you get that guidance and you take that action, you will have an experience that no words, even the ancient Aramaic words, cannot approximate. Even Yeshua said, there are so many things I would want to tell you, and you can't hear them because the language can't convey. Words don't teach. Experience teaches. So set Rachma, set Kubba, ask to be shown how. One of the things I feel it's akin to as I've listened to the teachers that resonate with me is here's this word for humility from the ancient Aramaic, and the definition of it in the ancient Aramaic is something like this: the ability to look for and find, to see in another person the highest and the best, to be able to see in another person that shining, shimmering radiance of creative energy, that infinite mind of God, to be able to see that even if they're not experiencing it in themselves, even if they're in sadness, even if they're in fear, even if they're raging at you. Humility is my ability to look at another soul, to look at another energy system, and see the mind of God in it, and then choose to cooperate only with that highest and best, only with that energy of creation and love. And I can only do that if I have Rachma and Kubha set. It helps me see a level beyond what my eyes and physical perception can experience. That would be my answer to your question, Patsy, and thank you for the question.
I will say thank you on her behalf. I think she signed off because of the noise in the background, maybe, but I believe she's probably still listening.
Well, questions or comments from you on that, Michelle, or any other points to clarify from your experience?
Actually, when you were speaking about that, the end, I, you know, I had a feeling come up because I recognize that I can do that so cleanly with my clients. They, you know, come here for support for whatever problem they perceive going on or whatever change they want to make, and it's very easy, I find, to do it with them. But then, you know, I'm looking in the mirror sometimes or working with my teenagers, and it gets a little fuzzier. So I was just thinking, well, you know, the ability is there, but then when my thoughts that are disintegrative and the content starts showing up, then it's when it gets blurry. And Carrie Ellis, I like the way she discusses this concept in some of her workshops, that, you know, the projector, the lens is there, and the love is moving through you, but then you got these little spit wads on the cover of the lens, and so kind of disjoints that energy and kind of clouds the ability to really, you know, perceive and intend with love. And that's the forgiveness work, is removing those spit wads.
Yeah, that's the taking the cloth to wipe the lens clean. Absolutely. And it's important to understand that there's a lot of that just has momentum in it. I really like the piece I heard from Abraham not too long ago, where Abraham Hicks was talking about, well, sat in a chair and said something about, I have this deep-seated pattern. And Abraham said, there is no such thing as deep-seated. There's something with a lot of momentum, something you keep picking up and practicing. And it can have a lot of momentum in this moment because you're pouring your mind energy into it, but there is no such thing as deep-seated. In each moment, you have the infinite capacity to choose the focus of your conscious awareness. And as you do that, whether you focus on the negative or you focus on the positive, you literally create your experience of life.
So what I notice on that point is that it's something to purposely generate when you're kind of being conscious, right? But in the times when I'm not necessarily focused on that way, it appears that the default is more attuned to love and higher vibration. And the reason I notice that is that a surprising event will happen. Maybe I go through a drive-through and, you know, the person gives me a bag of food and then they just wave me off, no charge. Or I'll come up somewhere and someone will make an accommodation for me that's, you know, breaking the rules, but certainly works in my favor. And then I realize that my way of being is evoking love in other people, even when I'm not, like, purposefully aware of it. Whereas, you know, that's a difference from the in-between time, so to speak, where, you know, you're like, okay, let me set Rachma, I'm going in to talk to the boss, and I got to get my, you know, my thinking on straight, or I got to go talk to the bank about this problem and get my Rachma engaged. But just in, you know, so when you talk about momentum, that's the way I see it unfolding for myself, is that, you know, the in-between time is sort of like a naturally present more and more.
Well, if you get that momentum going, it should be your experience, absolutely. And, you know, you've been around Michael Rice long enough and Jeannie, you know, if you go to an intensive, that one of the things that's asked of everybody is to agree to do a certain number of worksheets every day and to do a certain number of episodes of love exchange with other people and with yourself in the mirror. And this is something that's to be done not when the grizzly bear is charging you. That's not when you need to learn to shoot the bow and arrow. You do that when you take time out and you're calm and your intention is to focus on the loving energy, to experience it more so it becomes more familiar, that you're building that mental muscle and it becomes a default habit. And that helps me carry myself through those times when my children do something that resonates anger in me. When my children do something that I'm still judging myself negatively for having done in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when I start to see, over time, the benefits of a practice, a spiritual practice, a tithing. A tithing is not just sending money. It's talking about my time, my intelligence, my money, and my energy devoted to something every day that helps me build my spiritual body. My viable, conscious, spiritual body needs to be massaged, needs to be awakened, needs to be strengthened, needs to have enough momentum to carry me past the cultural traditions, the ancestry patterns that I got energetic and genetic from my parents, both sides, the experiences that I have interacting with my children who have their own energetic patterns to work out. And it's a process of building my strength through practice, practice, practice.
I couldn't agree more. It sounds a lot like 12 steps. Missy had to go, just so you know. She was driving somewhere. She has a commitment to attend to, and I asked her, I said, well, text me your question, and I haven't heard back for her. So she's busy, so I'm sure she'll call back on Monday to have her question answered.
All right. Well, is there anything else going on in the chat room or anybody with a hand up?
No, not right now. Got 7 minutes left, and nothing specific. When you talk about the daily practice, I was going to say it reminds me a lot of the field of substance abuse, where people are in recovery from their dependency on a chemical or behavior, and that's recommended to have a daily practice where you're waking up, reading a certain amount of spiritual literature and, having a regular attendance to connect with other like-minded people. And so, you think about this, it's kind of like recovery from fear and hostility. There's a lot of parallels there. I just can see based on what you just said as far as how you strengthen your spiritual acumen.
Well, one of the things you're mentioning reminds me of Michael's talk about the most popular drug on the planet, which is rage. And it's the most difficult drug to deal with because it's free and the supplier's internal. And the guidance to use it seems to come from a pretty reliable source because it comes from the individual. It comes from the conscious, logical mind that says, hey, I've seen this before. I know how to respond to this. Rage on that person. And it might sound funny, but it's the truth. One of my favorite bumper stickers of all time is, don't believe everything you think. And my conscious logical mind can build rationalizations for just about any kind of self-destructive or other destructive aberrant behavior. And I know I've mentioned this before, but it's one of my favorite lines from Guy Finley when he says, he almost comes out of his chair with his vehemence about this, and he says, we must actively, consciously steal from ourselves every excuse to be angry, bitter, hurtful, resentful, negative whatsoever, whether to ourselves or anyone else. Because if we don't actively do that, we will be able to rationalize any level of abuse and atrocity. So it's not just about reading, spiritual readings. That's one thing, you know, stimulate my mind a little bit in the right direction. Tap into some other great minds that had some positive, loving thoughts. That's one thing. And if I read every spiritual book in the world, and I don't practice spiritual energy, if I don't practice setting Rachma and Kubba, if I don't practice removing the things that are less than love, I won't move at all. I won't strengthen my viable conscious spiritual body. It will stay in the infancy. It'll stay as a fetus. Fine, doing a little reading with daily practice. And it doesn't have to be the reality management worksheet, but that's one fabulous tool that's available for free. It might be Ho'oponopono or the Sedona Release Method or the Four Agreements or Byron Katie's work, or the list goes on. It can be the faster EFT tapping in combination with good motivational spiritual ideas that you read. I have to practice and strengthen in my practice and strengthen my awareness that, wow, this does make a difference. When I tap and breathe and do worksheets every day, when I take time to read Course in Miracles, Way of Mastery, you know, Anthony DeMello, Guy Finley, every day, I notice what the kind of thing you were talking about, Michelle. I notice things are going better in my life. I notice I handle upsets more easily. I notice I didn't even get triggered when I dropped this thing behind the heavy couch and I had to take a half an hour to try and move the couch and arrange the furniture and move the carpet and fish it out because it was a valuable, you know, earring or ring or whatever. And I just laughed when I dropped it back there and realized, oh, there's a half an hour's worth of work. That happens to me when I'm practicing. It doesn't happen automatically. What happens automatically is the default system. The default system is what my bloodline on my dad's side and my mom's side gave me. What happens automatically is the playing, constant loop playing of the autopilot, which is the conditioning of the culture I grew up in. And my job, because I want things to be more loving in my life, my job is to practice. My job is to find what works for me and do it and then do more of it. So we're down to about a minute left. And I have great appreciation for everyone who's chosen to listen this week. Thank you for sharing your time and your money and your intelligence and your energy with us and whatever else serves your spiritual growth, because you're helping make the world a better place by making your life better. So we join you in that, and we invite you back for next week. And in the meantime, have the best year yet of your eternal life. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.